All right, let's go ahead and start microformats discussion.
I can give you one of these if you want.
All right, so microformats. There's a couple different ways to look at them. One way to look at them is that it's a way to add structured markup to data that's already being published on the web. Right. So there's many cases where there's data being published on the web already, and microformats are a strategy, a philosophy for how to actually provide some explicit structure to that data that's already there and has implicit structure. Another way to think of it is that, like from a web designer's perspective, web designers, like at least modern progressive web designers, often try to use semantic and meaningful class names and have the markup being meaningful and completely try to keep the presentational stuff in the style sheets. And so in that regard, microformats are a way that we can have kind of established semantics schemas that can be reused from one place to another. Microformats started actually with a format called XFN, which stands for XHTML Friends Network, which is basically just a way to build a distributed social network on the web by adding rel attributes to links from like one person's homepage to another. So for example, I could add a link from my homepage to Jackson's and put rel equals met space contact to say that I've met Jackson and he's a contact, right? So in this way it can be all distributed. So and some of the other early microformats were HCard and HCalendar. This is the intro to XFN, and just showing how you can build a network in a distributed way. Other ones, HCard and HCalendar. HCard is a one-to-one translation of VCard, the VCard format, into HTML. So basically what we do is we take the field names and VCard, and they become class names on elements in HTML, for the most part.
So VCard, if you're not aware, is what nearly every address book program uses. When you save this, if you've got VCF files out, that's VCard.
Right. And likewise, HCalendar is a mostly one-to-one translation from iCal, which is what most calendar programs use. Apple's iCal and Sunbird. I actually don't think Outlook uses it, but just their own problem. I mean, it's a IETF standard. I believe it's IETF for iCal.
Yes.
Okay.
It's not IETF standard.
It's about 7 or 8 years old standard. So.
Is VCard open standard too?
Yes. It's managed by not Oasis.
Some consortium.
It's some special consortium or. It'll say on the web page. And so some of the principles that have been kind of developed after the first couple of formats were created, some principles have kind of been developed on how we can go about adding structure to the web in general. And these principles kind of boil down to, like, first of all, keep it simple. Solve a specific problem as specific as possible, right? So often problem could be actually a compound problem, and it's probably better to solve one of the composite problems rather than trying to solve the compound problem all at once. Reuse as much as possible. Like, the last thing you want to do is reinvent, especially because the intention is to put this stuff on the web and have it consumed by a large number of people. Reinventing your own like schemas and class names and stuff. It's kind of a recipe for disaster because other people have spent a good deal of time, like for iCal and VCard, people spend a good deal of time trying to figure out what the field name should be, what they should be called, which should be included, what shouldn't. So rather than have that same discussion again for 5 years, we can just reuse them, and it works pretty well. Like, it covers most use cases. And so first principles go simplicity, reuse. I said another one in there. Right. Oh, and humans first, machine second. Right. So, one of the purposes of microformats is to make the data that is published human viewable. Right. So, all this stuff is by adding structure to the HTML, which, since it's HTML, it's already renderable, right? So at the very least, a page with microformats can be viewed in a browser, which cannot necessarily be said about plain XML or RDF, right? There are special applications that can consume those formats, but they can't consume unknown formats for the most part. So the idea is to make them human presentable, right? So that people can actually read them and understand them, and only secondarily make them consumable by machines. We want them to be consumable by machines, for sure, and parsable, but like if there's a conflict between those two desires, we pick humans first, because for several reasons. Because it makes it easier for humans to actually publish, right? Because we want these things to actually be able to like writable by hand. Because we all know like that's how I actually learn HTML is by writing by hand, not actually using like Dreamweaver or GoLive. I mean, most people who learned, at least my experience, most people learned HTML like did like view source and copy and paste it and eventually it went from there. So I guess that's a little bit of history and kind of ideas behind microformats. Anything to add, Kevin?
Well, I can take it from a different angle if you like.
Okay.
So another way of looking at this is when we started out with the web back in the mid-90s, we had HTML, and it was originally designed, actually in the early 90s, it was originally designed as a structured markup language. It was meant to express structure, so you have header tags, you have nested lists, you have a whole bunch of structure that's defining a structured document, because it was originally done for marking up physics papers. And what happened in the browser wars was that presentation got folded into it. You got more and more presentation attributes sent to HTML in an arms race. And this led to a schism. It led to the engineers who were interested in structure throwing up their hands and saying, what is this rat's nest? And went off and invented XML. And then there was a sort of separate revolution inside the HTML world, which was saying, okay, let's split the presentation out of this stuff, and that was where CSS came from. And what's happened is that basically these forks have been separate for a few years. The engineers have been off doing XML, thinking it's great, using it for all kinds of things, but you try and put that in a web browser, and anyone who's not an engineer goes, what is this shit? It's full of tags and noise, and I can't understand it. Whereas at the same time, the designers have learned the error of their ways, if you like, or basically, you know, said, all this basic if and table-based layout is driving me insane. There must be a better way. And these structured HTML plus CSS way has done that. So this is sort of a way of bringing the two paths back together. It's saying, let's think about structured markup within HTML. Let's think how we can cleanly represent data structures from applications in HTML, with the goal of being able to transform them into HTML and back again. So part of the point of this is making HTML not just a write-only format for your applications, but something that can express the underlying structures you've got there so you can read it back out again. So that's the other side of the hybrid formats.
Right.
And roots.
Sure. Are there any like questions that I don't like intend to like just like give a presentation all the time, but
please. I think it works well if we show some examples. Which ones do you want to look at? Let's look at HCanada. So HCanada.
That's up right there.
This stuff here. So basically, if you look inside an iCal file, it's this data structure like this. It looks like a mail header, basically. It's that kind of data format. Attribute colon value. So what we did was we took this and mapped this through into HTML. So the bracketing stuff becomes a span, the class name that matches here. The stuff that the values become class names. We have class URL, we have class summary, and so on. So basically we map the keys into class names and the values into human visible text. So what you see in the browser looks like the card. So you get the line that looks like the data, the event, but there's structure hidden inside it. And this gives you a couple of advantages. One is you can parse this and turn it back into this, The other is you now have some very clear style names here that you can then use for CSS style. So if we look at good example of this.
We'll do a context blog.
So you go to
context
blog.
I guess because there's a link on there. Because the XTB link is on there.
Oh, it's actually on there.
Is it down at the bottom?
It's on the right side. So,
yeah. Top right.
Okay, so he's got a bunch of events here.
And the images are being inputted around.
Yeah. Anyway, he's got a bunch of events in his sidebar here.
That's us.
He's sort of here.
he's at the other one, but yeah.
So this is his list of events. Now these are marked up with HMN.
H calendar.
So if you use source name, it looks like that stuff we had earlier.
Just search for the event.
Yeah, there you go.
Damn, I'm good.
Okay, so there's a bunch of structured markup in there. It presents like a list of events, but this means that we can feed this through a web service and turn it back into an iCalendar file. So if you've got that's this one, scroll up, Andy.
Scroll up.
If you click
where
this
it says
subscribe,
or actually just hover that so you can see the link. Yeah. Oh, you can't be on the status
okay.
bar.
Anyway, just click that. What that will do is.
Clicking. Launching application iCal.
Yep. So this launches iCal. It connects to a remote server and subscribes to this cat. So this is connecting to a server in the UK that is parsing Tamtex page and translating those
page calendar
events back into iCalendar. If you click that. There we go.
Okay.
On refresh now. Okay, so suddenly, do today. Cool. Those events that were in its sidebar are now in here. Now, the nice thing about this is you can set this up as a live subscription, and this means that you can add an event to your blog, and it can show up in people's calendars who are tracking your stuff.
So you can actually go right-click on Tontext Thoughts and hit refresh. And if he had...
Right-click? What was that?
Yeah. I'm a Mac user, but I buy a two-button mouse.
So there, Andy.
Apple's stupid.
You're going to release a two-button mouse.
I've been using Apple for a long time.
Don't get into that.
Okay. And they just need a two-button mouse.
Okay, so that's an example of preserving the data in the web page that was in the other format and be able to translate it back again. So this gives you a lot of power. If you go back to microformats.org, there are other examples in here of people who have done other things with this. Can you go down a little bit? Annotations down a bit?
Ryan King made an H calendar creator.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. Pretty cool.
This was that guy.
This one.
Nowhere near as cool as what you're about to see.
Okay.
There it is.
So this.
Click on the demos 1 minute.
So what we have here is if you view source on this. We basically got five or six events. There's six events here. Yeah? Marked up and labeled. Keep scrolling. And that's the entire markup we have on this page. Then we've got a div called JH Calendar. And then back up to the
top. A bunch of cool
then
JavaScript.
Then we load some script. Okay? And so what? Back to here. So this calendar is being generated by a JavaScript that reads these events and then builds the calendar. And then you click the little links at the top. You can restyle the calendar there. So basically, this is yes, this is a whole bunch of tables drawing grids of numbers and stuff. but it's being done by a little bit of JavaScript on the client from this new app. So this is, you know, this is again, this is a way of saying, okay, how can we keep the data in a rich form and then make it reusable? And the nice thing is you can plug this script into any, add this JS script to any page that has the HTML, it'll do this for you. So if you've got a thing like context and you want to create a page like this, it'll do it from that. Just to replace the script. So this is a sort of demonstration of keeping the data rich.
Ryan, did you write the JavaScript?
Not on that one.
I did this.
That is really cool.
This one's nice too. So this is.
No, it's just
cool. That's supposed to be over there. So you can actually see it.
yeah, it's flash for fault. Location.
It's just a little wizard for creating.
Build it.
It actually already built.
Oh,
without you asking.
Wow.
That was a scratch and crush after I saw that.
It's building as I type, guys.
Wow.
Multiple build stuff.
And you just grab this stuff out here and paste that into your blog. How hard would it be to flickerize that? You just put a button to that.
To what?
To just make it so it just sends it to your blog.
Sure.
It's open source, man.
Les Orchard actually did a GreaseMonkey script that took this code and added a little button above every text entry field, so you can click the button and type the stuff in there and put it in your text entry field. So that you can, they've all linked on this page somewhere.
More cool HTML stuff? Do you want to go into
HTML? Have you got some HTML images as well?
HGraph demos, the most cool is the HGraph demos.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, we'll talk about HReview.
Let's talk about the simple ones first.
Okay.
Let's talk about tag, because we've thrown into the deep end. That's a huge piece of structured data. We're basically saying, here's an established schema for describing events, and here's how to map it into HTML, and you do two-way mapping. Tagging is... about as simple as you can get and still be adding meaning. So basically, what you do with tagging is you add one rel value. Now, if you're not familiar with rel, this is something that you can add to a link to say what the relationship is. Rel defines the relationship between the link to page and the current page or piece of information. So what we're saying with tag is the relationship is the remote link is a tag for the page that you're on. And then we define that. That means to point to what's called a tag space. So if Technorati is one, Wikipedia was a tag space as well. You basically have a path fraction, there you go, that's the tag space. And then the training piece in the after the last slash is the tag. Excuse me. This functions in two ways. One, it gives you a link that you can actually click on. So when you create links for these things, they're not some strange, scary thing like an RSS feed that you can click on and feel scared by and everything like that. They're actually useful links on your page. So if you click on Barcamp.
Oh, I was going to do that over there. That's cool. Got here. That's not Crash Browser. Please.
Well, that's
like
the
turn
something. I meant to go away.
There we go. Hey, I made it this time.
So there's people. Hello. Yeah, people who tag their posts with Barcamp. And if you go somewhere as well. It's yesterday.
Can we
look
now?
Yeah.
And look, this is probably us somewhere right now.
Yes. Yes.
It works.
Okay. So,
tags.
Back to the tags. Yeah, thank you. So this is the tag space. This is the tag. And you can pick your own tag space. You can. The point of being able to pick your own tag space is twofold. One is it's to let you decide who you're who is defining the meaning. So you can link to Tekkerati or Flickr or Delicious, and they've basically got a fairly loose attitude to meaning. So anything with the same tag will be in the same place, even if it's Twister and you don't care whether it's a tornado or a game.
So they, for example, use their own tag space.
So they're using their own tag space. So this is all their posts about. That's something you can do as well. If you want to keep your links within your own site. But they will still show up in
Tekkerati
because we index those.
Sorry to interject, but so there's been a lot of talk about openness and that, you know, Tekkerati uses it as a serving suggestion. You're under no obligation to use their tag space. By all means, please make up your own. Tekkerati will still pick it up. So we've got a lot of flack by having that, but it's, please, use your own.
The idea is you want a destination as well. You want to be given someone something that's related to yours. So if you happen to be posting something about gardening and happen to be a gardening group that has a better tag space, then that's the recommendation.
So someone just said, is it like an XML namespace? And it's kind of like an XML namespace, except it actually points somewhere, which is important for this, because you'll be saying, put a real link in here that people will click on, so it should actually point somewhere. Whereas most XML namespaces are some abstract URL to do this.
URI,
yeah. These are real URLs. they locate something.
Yes.
So do you consider this to be a micro format?
Do I?
The rel thing.
Yeah, no, so it's called rel.
Rel tag is the micro format. Rel is a structural element of HTML.
Right, that's been an HTML since the beginning.
They define a preset set of values for that, and they say you can extend this to the profile. So the preset set of values is things like
style sheet,
next page, previous page, up, stuff like that. So we define a new rel value which says tag, which says the remote page is a tag for the piece you want.
And just to ask a bunch of dumb questions all at once.
Absolutely.
So the thing that the tag refers to is just the whole page and the things on, but there's no way to get more specific.
Yes.
No. The tag can refer to a part of the page.
No,
right.
Hang on. Which end do you mean?
Well, if you put in a page on your blog, rel tag equals whatever,
right,
then what you're tagging is that entire page, because there's no way to know what.
So that is left ambiguous. The rel spec says it can refer to a page or a part of a page. With the tag spec, we didn't try and make that concrete. The interpretation we've built in our implementation technology is if it's inside a post, you're tagging a post. So we don't go out beyond the post boundaries and tag the whole page, we just tag the post you're on. There are other microformats that reuse rel tag, such as HReview, Xspoke, which use it to tag something else. So for HReview, you're running a review of something, and then you can tag that review with a bunch of different keywords, and you can put multiple reviews in one blog post, but the scope of the tags belong inside the review. So tag doesn't define scope, because that's hard, but it says, we're sort of deferring the decision of what the scope is to other applications.
So the consumer has to decide what...
Yes.
The application.
This is the humans, machines things first.
Right.
This is simple enough that people can write these by hand and not worry about it too much, and then deciding which post it in becomes a hard problem for me when I write the parser, that's the right way around. Because there aren't many people writing parsers. There's, me and Ice Rocket and the other guys. But there are also people writing content, so we'll make it easy for them.
Right.
You have a question in the actually.
Actually, you could link to with name, or you could use ID for the same thing. You could link to another part
kind
of the page, but we really don't have a. I guess that's undefined when it comes to tagging, whether that could be a tag.
You could, but you'd have to sort of write an extra spec to say that.
Right.
If you look at. Looking at HReview. So HReview uses tags in two different ways, which makes it even more interesting. It basically defines a span, or rather, containing element with the class HReview. that contains the whole review. And then tags within that. Can you go down?
Over there. Do you want to dim the lights or something so that the thing goes away? The one that says lights.
Throw it on it.
Okay. Rel equals tag up there. So this is actually using tags in a secondary way. This is saying, here are a list of attributes that I'm reviewing. So I'm giving it 18 out of 30 for food, tag of food. I'm giving it 19 out of 30 for ambience, 15 out of 30 for service, and 15 out of 30 for price. Yeah, see all that?
Where is it, 30?
Two out of ten.
Rating 15, best 30. So rating stuff again. This is, you know, the rating is defining it. By default, that's out of 5 because that seems to be what everyone uses. But if you want to define a different range, you say best, and then it's, you know, then you define which is which.
So maybe I'm missing something, but to me it seems really weird that you have to choose a tag space in this particular example. I mean, why couldn't you just say price? Why does it have to be points?
You can pick a loose tag space if you're not bothered. You can pick something like Technorati or Flickr, and that's like a generic tag space. But it would make sense in this, you know, if you're reviewing something against criteria, to link to a place that actually defines that criteria.
So you can't just get it. You can't do that.
No. Well, it needs to make sense. The point is, you sort of could, but it should be a link that makes sense when you click on it. And you know, there are some minimal default ones that will take you somewhere when you click on them. But if you were building a review site, you would probably, and you've got criteria you're reviewing by, you would create a page that defines those criteria clearly. If you'd like consumer reports or something, or if you're, you know, if you're just building a generic restaurant review site, you would build your own space for that. That would be the most logical place to do that.
How would one aggregate that thing? If the criteria is all defined in different places.
Well, but remember the page you go to is supposed to be something that's meaningful to, like, if I'm going to read your review and you say ambiance, right, is good, I'm like, well, what do you mean by ambiance? Like, and right. So that's part of the tag page, can help me understand what you mean by it, right? For a parser, the tag is actually just the last part of the URL, right? So the tag is just ambiance, right? Where you actually link it to is kind of, can be irrelevant to whoever's aggregating. So, like, whoever's aggregating can just, I mean, if you want to keep the whole URL, you can.
It's the aggregator's decision. So,
right.
Sure, okay.
As an aggregator, I decide that I will fold all hominins together. I do keep the links around in case later on I want to go back and disambiguate them, but basically we fold them all into one uniform space and say they're words in the language, and we assume that if people are sufficiently worried, they'll come up with a distinct word. So it's kind of deferring the namespace problem. It is like XML namespace in that you always get into this, oh god, what if someone picks the same name as me, what do I do? Well, this is how you solve that problem. You point it somewhere else if it becomes a big issue. In practice, it hasn't so far. It may do at some point, you know, and that's why it's there, sort of future-proofing.
Okay, should we talk? There's several other really simple microformats like RealTag. For example, VoteLinks. VoteLinks are simply just a way to do distributed voting, which essentially the only new thing I'm seeing here is Rev. Rev is like Rel, but opposite. Right? Rel says that thing, like with tags, Rel says that thing is a tag for this page. Right. Rev is the opposite. It's saying this thing is a vote for that thing over there. So this was used by Technorati during pre-election days to do distributed polls. So essentially you can just link to Bush or Kerry's website and do Rev vote for or vote against.
It's still up.
No.
Unfortunately.
You got lost in the last article.
And there's vote abstain as well. So simply, it's just really a simple way to say, you know, this thing I'm writing here is a vote for or vote against that thing over there.
Right.
So
And the other, you know, the other way of looking at this is like a more nuanced nofollow. Nofollow was defined after this to say, oh, search engine don't count this. And basically, it's the same thing. Google has said forever that we think of links as votes. This is a way of saying, okay, this link is a vote, but it's a vote against.
Or it's an exception.
So it's putting the...
Or it's an explicit vote for.
Yeah, or explicit vote for. It's putting the classic free-value voting that Robert's Rules of Order and so on is institutionalized into a...
Well, to further differentiate, nofollow was created so that you say that this content isn't necessarily created by me.
No. Right. It was saying, I'm not endorsing this link. That's its semantic meaning. I, as the owner of this site, am not endorsing this link. Do not give it weight from me. It's not saying I didn't create it. It's saying don't give it weight.
Nofollow is like the worst possible name.
I'm not.
Out of all the choices, you
could. I'm not going to argue that. It's, you know, there's a pragmatic aspect to this stuff. You know, it's out there. It's shipped. We wrote up a nofollow spec. There's a nofollow spec on the site as well.
That was written up.
Written up, like, by me.
Post.
After they posted their thing and after I presented it. But, so that's. There is some overlap. These are doing similar things.
Rel license is another one that's very simple. Essentially, it's another one of the rel ones. You do a rel equals license, and then you link to the license for the current page.
Right.
So this is used commonly with Creative Commons, and in fact, Yahoo has built their Creative Commons search engine based on rel license. So essentially, in this case, you're just saying this thing over there is a license for this page that is containing this link. Simple, right? Yeah.
I'm curious why you guys thought that one was necessary, since Creative Commons already publishes, RDF
right.
blogs that you're supposed to stick on your pages
for
this purpose.
I can get to that.
Right.
Because those aren't human readable.
I'm not a big RDF fan,
so,
but they already do
no,
it.
If
right.
you actually look at what they do now, they do this as well.
They actually do both.
They generate both.
Oh, really?
They adopted this. They said, well, that's nice. Adopted this straight away.
Okay.
The nice thing is, the problem with RDF is you end up putting stuff in twice.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want this link in, you put the link in, then you put the RDF in as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so you end up having two sets of things to maintain. And because one of them is sort of invisible to humans, it can get stale. So you may decide to change your license, edit something, and not make it consistent again.
And
so part of the point of this is to fold it back into the single place.
And chances are you're putting a link anyways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most likely. This is Creative Commons. All right. Well, if we've already got this data, which has an implicit schema and an implicit semantic, let's make it explicit,
mm-hmm.
right, by putting a relic license on.
Okay.
Okay. Move on to another format. I'm going to follow the release, page view. We talk about XFolk. XFolk, okay. XFolk is. XFolk is simply a format for doing folksonomy. Essentially, folksonomy is tagging that is like a specific user tagging a specific thing, right? And so since this is a way to take like what Delicious and for a lot of other tagging sites do and put it in a format such that it could be distributed and aggregatable. This is an example of like Delicious markup. Now if you just scroll and look at the XFolk version. Essentially, XFolk is just this container called XFolk entry. And in it, we just say, hey, this is the thing I'm tagging, the tagged link. That's the thing, and give it a title there. Give a description, like what I want to say about it, and then just give some tags. So this is another case where the rel tag is used in a little bit different way than like what we use for technorati tags, because really what we're tagging is this thing over here, that resource on the href. So it's a little bit different use of rel tag in this case. And so that's just... Essentially, the idea of this is to enable a way to take folksonomic data and make it, liberated. I'll let you be able to publish it anywhere and still have this structure, this take this implicit structure and make it explicit in such a way that it can be consumed and aggregated and fun, right?
I don't I don't understand how that's different than the rev tag.
What do you mean?
Well,
the rev attribute, or?
Well, so the other, so there's rel and it's rev.
Rev.
Right.
So the rev one points to itself. Is this pointing to itself?
No. So
no.
rel says the relationship is between, rel defines the relationship of the remote page relative to the current page. Rev defines that the other way around. So
depends on who's the subject and the object.
So the point...
Right. That's what I thought. But what is this one doing? Why
this
is
one... Okay, this
keep
one is... This one is tagging... Rather than tagging... Like, you could put a bunch of these in a blog post, right? Or a bunch of these in a page. But we're explicitly just tagging this entry, right? This thing.
So what we're saying is...
Does rev stand for anything?
Reverse relationship.
Right. Relationship and reverse relationship.
Yeah. It's super fun. So, because here we're trying to describe a lot of the information about a single link, you can't just fold it into a single rev. Okay, with the vote link, we have one little piece of information we'll stick onto that link so we can put it in a rev. Here we've got a bunch of textual stuff that we want the human reader with, so we need to define a structure to contain it. HReview is very similar. HReview has, here's the thing I'm reviewing at the top, and a marker for that. And then it has some stuff about it.
What is the direction of this? What is the thing? Because there's no in the F at the top, but it's tag link, tag. So you're tagging the Sifri entry, Sifri.com entry with, where is the tag? Is it down below, there's all that stuff in between.
Right. This is a description. These bits are optional. If you just wanted to do tagging, you could just apply these sort of.
So how would you tag multiple links?
How would you tag multiple links? You'd
have
multiple blobs of these.
You repeat this part again.
So this is exact. This is only for delicious style.
Right.
Here's a link.
Yes.
Here's a link.
You're tagging remote links. Yeah.
Right.
This is not like. Within a blog entry, I have a bunch of links.
Right, but you can. But you could put it in a blog entry, right?
Right, but then every single one of those links would be
another chunk like this, right?
But they don't necessarily have to look particularly crazy.
This is like the full example.
This is actually the noise example. Go down. This is the look like someone else's example. Yeah. There's a more compact one.
Oh, he's moved those onto another page.
Sorry. Ours, we actually use them with Flock's sort of web service thing. Ours are definitely using more space than this, but they don't look huge or anything.
We use them on Supercilious, too.
Can I just ask about the direction back? Because the direction seems backwards to me. So when I read that, when I read that anchor, right, it says A rel equals tag, A trap equals slash FP slash full sign. Right? That reads to me as I am the tag for FP Gibson full summary.
No.
Which is
no,
backwards.
No,
it should be rev.
No.
Rel says that's why the other one is rev. This says foxonomy is the tag for here. And what we're saying is this containment defines what it's referring to.
So what rel is remote to local, rev is local to remote.
Yes. So this is saying the remote site is a tag for the current place. And then this format says the place is defined as this link.
Okay, here's what I'm going on. It used to be a convention that in the head of your document, you would link to the email address of the author with a link rev equals made, ahrefs equals mail to the author.
Correct.
Right? Yeah. And that would mean I was made by
rev
this author.
Rev would be...
Right?
No, because that would apply to the page made the author.
Yeah.
Right. That'd be
can
wrong.
You look it up. Just search for rev made.
Right. Another example from the head of documents is style sheets. Style sheets are link rel equals style sheet, and then href, saying that thing over there is a style sheet for this page.
That makes sense.
All right. That's probably the most concrete example you can think of. Like that's because it's probably the most widely used. Not gonna work.
Yeah,
Eagles is a stock character.
That's too bad. These aren't helping me much either.
I wish you could search the resource mode.
Yeah. Rev made author.
Just out of curiosity, is it a matter of order you put the rel equals whatever, rel equals tag in the thing? Or
no, the attributes in HTML can be in any order. It doesn't matter. There's no significance to the order.
You put in some of the reason I spoke
about. Different people will have different conventions around it.
Any basic links, implications, details. Is it down there?
You just asked, how did that open the air?
Because it's set to 95 or something.
Okay. I think there's events closed up here.
Yeah, it's really hot. First time it's open.
It totally sidesteps the question. It doesn't say which one's which. It just says one's one way and one's the opposite.
It's, I think it's a bit clearer in the spec, HTML4 spec.
It's not a five spec.
It's generally four spec, five spec, and the page
I think I understand what you're saying.
Okay. Any other questions? Any other formats you'd like to see created?
Another quick couple of formats, because it's looking through. Rel enclosure, nice little one. This is another relationship. And this is the relationship that, you know, classic relationship, which says this remote thing here should be downloaded because it's an enclosure. This is already defined in RSS as a structural tag. It's already defined as a rel in Atom as an enclosure. And this is people using this out in the modeling their web pages to get the enclosures as well. So this is basically documenting this.
So, meaning when you click on it, it shouldn't open that page?
No,
it means your user agent should just go ahead and download it.
Right, it's into your user agent to basically preload this because people are going to want to play it.
Oh, preload it?
Yeah.
Just like enclosures work in RSS feed for podcasting. It says the user agent should just go ahead and download this. Or it's a hint that it should go ahead and download. A couple of formats we're working on. If you go back and scroll to the bottom.
Down to MF comment.
One, a location format for like location tagging. This is all like brainstorming stuff, so you don't want to like, this is like documenting all the previous different formats and stuff. The idea of location format is that we actually publish locations in human readable format, typically, but yet for a lot of applications we're somehow shoehorned into having to like look up latitude and longitude to put into the application. So like if we really want to enable like location tagging on the web, the way to do it would be to add structure to human readable locations. So we have that the subset of vcard that is an address. We're talking about pulling that out as its own macro format for location tagging, and then it all. Vcard also has, or Hcard has a geo format as well, so we can do.
There's no examples or anything in here?
No, that's just.
That's in the discussion.
Right, it's probably a discussion page with examples. But, and a resume format. This is one we're working on. This just documents typical resume formats. So that is like, it really sucks to have to go put your resume in on a bunch of different sites. It'd be like, and a lot of people end up publishing their resume on their own site. If you have your own site, you end up publishing it on your own anyways. So why don't we just try to add some structure to it so they can be parsed and job sites can pull out the stuff they care about anyways. So.
Sorry to interrupt. Brian Siepert, anyone know who he is or is he in here?
No.
Okay, I'm trying to collect on this auction stuff. Thanks, sorry.
So yeah, that's what we're working on. If you have any feedback or suggestions.
So one of the nice things about RDF is that anybody can create an ontology.
Right.
because the URIs are actually unique.
Right.
Doesn't matter. There's never going to be a function. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But this kind of has to be a bit centralized because
URLs.
You just have to be as weird as possible. Right?
URLs are unique as well.
But something when you're using classes, or if you're using Rails or Mesh
okay.
or something like that, you know.
Yes. Okay. I understood. Sorry. I thought you meant in the attack sense. Gotcha.
So in some sense, this has to be more centralized, more controlled
right.
than RDF.
In some sense, it's a bit more messy than RDF. All right. But in another sense, you can't make it explicit because not all the formats have it yet. But the idea is to actually provide a profile URL, actually URI by the HTML spec, for the micro format, which it gets put into the head. So there's a head attribute profile equals, which is then a space separated list of URIs, right? And so that references the URIs that are like semantics that you're applying to this page, right?
Okay, so you identify any user agents to this.
Right, so it's, you know, there's one for XFN, you know, already, but the other ones don't all have a profile URI yet. But the idea is that the order of them is not defined in HTML, but we're essentially kind of going on the assumption that you'd apply them in order of left to right, right? And another way around the messiness there is that we try to pick really either like a unique identifier or at least have a containing thing that's unique. It's like XFolk entry. It's
right,
not likely to clash with anything.
Right.
Vcard, vcalendar, not likely to clash with anything. So that does have to be worked on a little bit, but I think it's a solvable problem.
The other thing is that the model for creating these is to go and look at the existing practice as much as possible. So it's not like I'm going to go to my corner and make something up and then try and tell people to use it. It's much more, what are people doing already? What kind of stuff are they trying to express with this? How can we try and converge that? So part of the point is to try and get people to use the same terms. That's, you know, the fact that we've got several people using the same stuff for hCalendar instead of using their own ones means that we can have one script that runs on all of them. And that's a powerful thing. So part of the point is trying to converge ontologies, yes.
Right. But, I mean, you could, instead of using hCalendar or iCal, you could reuse someone's Magic Web ontology for calendars. And
right.
So the thing is, you could have, instead of that rel equals something, you could have rel equals a URI.
And there actually is a semantic web ontology for calendars,
right.
which actually reused iCal.
Okay.
So in this case, that's not a problem.
Okay, but is it just that it's nicer for people to type a little word than rather than type a URI? So
putting URIs in rels is sort of nasty. It's like, that's not what the spec says that they're supposed to be. I mean, you can do it.
I mean, it's just a string.
Yeah, you can do it, but, you know, it's, part of the point is to make these things easy to write, easy to remember. So we're trying to make small, human meaningful words.
Yeah.
And that does give us this, there may be some overlap problem with the theory of homonyms thing. But because we have containment, we can disambiguate that. And it's the same thing. It makes parsing it a little bit more tricky because you have to look at what's inside as well as just where it is. But the payback is it's actually really easy to add to lots of different kinds of markup. The other thing that's different about using classes as opposed to building RDF structures is that it's much easier to do multiple inheritance type stuff, saying this is one of these and one of these and one of these. Because you can put multiple rails on there, and you can say this fulfills three slots here. To do that in RDF, you have to build a fairly complicated structure of linking predicates to build that. You have to build a predicate for each one and then point back the same thing. Whereas with this, you can just stick those in. And it's also, it lets you do partial parsing as well. You can add new attributes on the end and people parse the old ones will still get them. So you have, it has some nice characteristics like that. There's trade-offs. It does make parsing harder. It makes creation easier. So it's always trying to balance that.
But picking, like, the choice to make things easier to publish is explicit. Like, it's intentional to make things as easy as possible within reason for people to publish, even if that sometimes means it makes it a little bit harder to parse and consume.
Yeah.
Because it actually provides more value to consumers if there's more content. Even if they have to work a little bit harder to parse it, they have more value in having more content. So.
Favoring content and its creation over.
Right. More content helps everyone, producers and consumers, right? And easier parsing only helps the consumers.
What is your like dream scenario or blue sky or something like this stuff over the course of the next 2 or 3 years? And I know that you guys obviously work in a search engine.
Right.
And there's probably a desire to see other search engines start to adopt this stuff. Because like right now, it's
no, we know.
Kind of cool.
The goal is to make my life easier parsing stuff.
Yeah. What's that?
Well, Kevin writes all the parsing stuff for TechNerdy. So
right.
The goal is to make Kevin's life easier. Right? Like, you notice one of the discussions is a blog format. So it's like, let's define like how you say this is a post and that's a post. And
so you don't have to go
so the,
figuring it out.
The point is, it's trying to make stuff more explicit.
Mm-hmm.
The key thing is adding more structure to the stuff that's in the web pages. So it's not just a bunch of presentation instructions like PDF.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually going back to its roots of expressing structure, expressing meaning. And yeah, so the RDF is like another branch of what I said when we had the XML presentation before. RDF was like a step beyond that, the XML side of saying, let's put some structure back in here, but let's hide it in the corner somewhere.
Yeah.
And you always have to, because you can't, there isn't a good serialization into XHTML. That might be a fun one to come up with.
Yeah.
RDF is an RDF expressing my format.
Because I can see, like, I can imagine. Sorry.
Okay.
Oh.
So you can.
I can imagine, you know, like Google, for example, shying away from this stuff because in some way this model of producers asserting information about their pages runs counter to Google because that's how spammers work. So their whole deal is that they're trying to figure out how to get around the assertions into the...
Right.
Google's key insight was that a link is expressing a vote.
Right.
And therefore, how can we work from that?
Mm.
And so they looked at the links, and they looked at the link text, rather than looking at the meta attributes on the current page.
Mm.
So they looked for, if you like, outside confirmation of what the page was about.
Mm.
So it is trusting the links, but it's trusting it in a distributed way,
mm.
if you like. So that's an important insight that, you know, bears into how we write our search engines too.
Mm.
But, you know, we don't really want to stop there. We think there's a nice feedback loop here. Where we are being in a search engine means that we can write a parser for this stuff, people get a tangible benefit by the tag stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We can say, okay, if you put this rel tag stuff in, we'll put you on this page about that tag because we know what you mean.
Right.
So here's a nice little reward. You get on this page, other people will find you by putting that link in.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives a feedback loop where people say, yeah, I'll do that. What's wrong with that? That's an advantage. That's one of these, like, we get an end-to-end link to their page, which makes our index more useful, which makes their page more findable. So if you can build feedback loops like that, then there's, you know, there's strong power to it. And I think the event stuff is similar. I mean, we're not aggregating events at the moment. There are other people doing that.
Yeah.
We could do that in the future. That's something we could look into.
It seems like there's really clear paths where all this stuff can go. Like HCard, HCal kind of stuff, obviously. Stick it in your iCal or stick it into your
right.
address book or something
right.
like that. The tag link in the Xbox stuff is more search engine friendly, but then the blog post stuff seems kind of weird to me because I'm not totally clear on who, besides, I guess, you guys
right.
would do something with that.
Well, one motivation behind having like a blog format, which is essentially a syndication format,
mm-hmm.
is one of the problems that we try to solve or try to avoid causing is publishing the same data in two different formats on the web,
yeah.
right? Because anytime you have the same data or two pieces of data that are dependent on each other,
mm-hmm.
It's likely that one of them will get out of sync,
mm-hmm.
right?
It's not
necessarily always the case. You know, CMS is like, you know, it's dynamically produced. It's not always a huge problem, but publishing the data in two places, like, I don't know if you saw, you know, read Tim Bray's blog. He's created XML, and he did a post not too long ago called Atomic RSS. It's basically a way to apply the Atom namespace to RSS, right? So that you're, like, if you have an Atom feed and RSS feed, they can actually have the same semantics when you put the same stuff on them. So having, like, publishing the same data in two different formats can actually make things ambiguous and tough to update and all sorts of just kind of weird problems that make it tough to consume and make it harder to maintain. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if we have the implicit structure already in the blog, why can't we just make that explicit and enable a way to produce and consume HTML someplace? Right.
This is like getting the RSS essentially baked into the into the page.
Yes.
Kind of. I mean, at the moment, when I index blogs, I have to read the feeds. All of them, and the and the page, and then I have to run a whole bunch of heuristics to say what the hell are they talking about? Which of these are full? Which of these, you know, the feeds are partial sometimes. The atom ones at least tell me when they're partial. The RSS ones is fine, God knows. Then I have to pass the HTML to see. Now I've got a bunch of heuristics to say, well, it's got an H3, then it's probably the title. Mm-hmm. If there's a link, if it's to the same site, then it might be the permalink. Is this rel equals bookmark? Yes, it is the permalink. Great. And you know, it's hard and messy and. Yeah, great. I maintain all this stuff. And so, yes, a format like that would be a blessing to me, but it also would let you do the kinds of things we'd be doing with the HCon stuff. Mm. So you could have a Grease Monkey script that knows which post you're hovering over.
Right.
Because the structure is explicit.
Right.
And do that kind of stuff.
So you might want to reblog it, mm-hmm. and suddenly your tools can recognize that in the HTML itself, rather than having
so you want to quote someone's blog post, you could select a piece of it and hit a scriptlet button.
Right.
And it would know which post you're
reading. With Bud Gibson earlier today.
Yeah. It would know the permalink. Right.
It would know the permalink for that piece because it can read the structure of the page you're in. There's a whole bunch of things like that you can do once you've got people to converge on structure.
Because what we're doing, because you have that data, right, of like with permalink and the post is, but it's divorced, like in two different formats.
Right.
Right. One format that's structured, and one that's not. So we can enable a lot of cool shit if we can get those back together. Mm.
So is this a
microformat?
Yeah.
This is not quite a
question. Not quite.
Okay. This is what I was being confused by earlier.
Oh, you're
attention. A, gotcha.
Yeah. A.
It starts with an A. That's it. Now I get it. Okay. Can we go back to Jojo and I'll talk about Jojo and then we'll do this one.
Yeah.
Jojo or Shosho or XOXO?
Just not hands and kisses, please. Okay. This is an early microformat, one that was basically Tantek and I got together one night in IRC with Mark Pilgrim and said, how about we find a way to represent outlines? Look, there's this existing HTML markup thing called an ordered list. That's an outline. Done. And basically went from that. But the other way of looking at this is a way of mapping an abstract data structure that you might find in a scripting language that consists of ordered lists and key value pairs. So lists and dictionaries in Python, lists and hash tables in other languages. All the scripting languages have this concept, except PHP, which sort of blurs it in a horrible way. I'm not getting that one now. So the point of this was saying, when you use these scripting languages, you tend to build these nested structures with some learning, a bunch of key value pairs, a bunch of lists. HTML has these primitives that represent them, so here's a nice one-to-one mapping going back and forth. And so if you use this, you can basically take those kinds of structures and push them straight through, and then pass them out the web page and pull it back in again. So you can go and read this thing, this page full of nested lists, and turn it back into a data structure. And this is something I use internally a lot to move data around between languages. I've got a Python and a PHP reader and writer for this stuff, so I can communicate between front end and back end.
So you serialize into.
Shosho. Sorry. Use it as a transport.
And it gives you some nice, it has some nice properties because you can always display it. Mm-hmm. So you pipe this stuff around. You can debug it first by saying, does it, it's layered coherently.
There's a render, right?
You don't have to go and read the XML and then go and like you've got a nice human readable nested view of it. It also means you can style it. So if you want to do nested lists different ways at different levels, you can show that. But there's a lot of nice things you can do with it. If you look at implementations on here. If we look at Chris's first, that's easy to answer.
Yeah.
So what Chris did was he took the JoJo structure.
You know what you're trying.
Right.
And he wrote some JavaScript that looked for the containers that gave you expanded track arrows. So this, again, the source of this page is just a nested list.
Just HTML and...
But he wrote the JavaScript that would do the hide show on the container list. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that.
Right.
Then layers top this. You know how to operate? No.
Yes, I remember. Because we were working on a pre version that didn't go very far.
So he hasn't got custom just data, but he's ready.
Right, but it's Ajax based off of a declarative structure. And, like, it doesn't actually do any callbacks. But, let's see. But, like, if we...
And the upper and left arrow right. Okay.
Oops. Oh, it's not getting any ones that started. It's Flock's fault.
Yeah. Any floppers in here?
Nope.
There we go. Okay, so now do... Uh-huh. And we go down. We go to the other side.
Probably control.
Control, yeah.
Oh. Oh, that's closing it. I got it.
The problem that is the ship, I think ship was not there.
There we go.
So he's written a nice little app editor that you basically operate from the keyboard, and you can do a draggy version as well. But the point is, it's manipulating a DOM, it's manipulating an external data structure which you can then move back and forth. So part of this is sort of, if you rethink the Ajax thing to move HTML around instead of doing the XML around, you're saving yourself a lot of parsing and marshalling and unmarshalling.
Right.
Serializing and unserializing.
Right. You're working with something that the JavaScript community...
Well, something that's native to the application.
Representations.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and so once it gets back to you, you only have one representation for your data instead of two.
And the other nice thing is that the CSS understands the representation too,
right.
So you can fairly easily generate some of that between the data. So there's a...
So this is this, like, it's just...
Yeah.
You see, it's just this, and he applies his new, his outliner class to...
But he didn't have the saving. That would be it. Definitely, it's nice to read.
Well, he did. He did also. He also has another script that does. He developed a little format for sending HTML deltas back and forth. So, like, just saying, like, this ID was changed to this, or added this ID of this type, or like this element type with this ID after this ID, and
like a nested diff kind of thing.
Right, but yeah, it's like a diff on a tree, essentially. It's like saying I added this node at this point, or I changed this node. So that's Shosho. Back to attention.
Sure. So attention is an extension or an application of Shosho. So the point of attention is to keep track of stuff you've read. This came out of a conversation between Steve Gilmore and Dave Sifri a couple of years ago about saying, with all this feed reading stuff, all this web surfing stuff, it would be really nice to keep track of what you've read already so you don't have to go back and look at it again. And basically what we did was take the structured bookmark stuff that OpenNode is used for, and redefine that into Shosho, and then added some elements to say here are the items that belong to those feeds or pages, blogs if you like, and added some semantics to whether you've read them. So this is a work in progress. We've got a very partial implementation on our site. Someday we'll be kind of finishing it. But basically, it's if you look at the structure, it's pretty much Shosho with some defined pieces. So it's using this name value pairs, using a dictionary, using a definition list and a dictionary, and using this element, so this the thing. So it's a mapping of that kind of structure into something else.
And so it's not a microformat yet because...
It was developed before some of our microformat principles came to be, and it doesn't follow some of them.
Okay.
So it needs to be adjusted in a few ways before we could actually it conform to what we now consider a microformat.
Gotcha.
But
we got sort of swamped with making up other new microformats.
Yeah, we keep making up new ones instead of working on the old one. So.
How is attention accessible? Because I've been reading about it for a while, but I don't feel like I've ever actually understood.
Right. Essentially, attention XL. I'm sure you understand the common use for OPML just as a list of subscriptions, right, that blog readers can spit out and whatnot. So.
Oh my gosh, guys. It's like 500 degrees in here.
I know.
You can need a fan.
So attention XML is basically a way to say, like, here's my subscription list, and it can be, I believe, like, in groups, you know, you can group it and stuff just like can with OPML. And additionally, like for each subscription, like here's some posts from it, and here's when I read, and this is when I read them, right? So the idea is that it's a way for interchange of attention data, like what is it I'm reading and what is it I care about, so that like, you know, if you have a desktop client, you can keep track of when you read stuff and whatnot. It could send an attention.xml file to some service provider that can then make suggestions on what you should be reading. Right.
It's like sending in your history file.
Right.
Your browser.
Yeah, something like that. But it's an essentially structured and targeted specifically for, you know, what blogs or what web pages and sites are reading.
So do you have something that puts it in your page? Do you have an application?
We have a barely implementation.
We have a better implementation.
We don't really have much. We're doing it. There's another company that's doing some work with that. They're probably they might be on here or not. Yeah, there's another company that's doing starting some. I don't know if they have anything public yet, like available yet. If they're doing with it, but this is very much just something that like. I think the emphasis point was that like we know it's going to be necessary, like or it's know it's going to be very useful to like it's going to be useful to be able, like send like attention data around like so that people can then make recommendations, searches can make recommendations.
Oh, the heat!
So people can make recommendations, and so in order to do that effectively, we kind of need a transport mechanism and
go to somebody to steer on this.
Right, and so. Can't really parallel.
Basically, can we expect that there's a whole bunch to find about how to add and merge stuff, which does make sense if you just haven't implemented that yet. But until we implement that, it's my business. Because you need to be able to synchronize.
I have tried like a huge
M&M. That's the problem. It's like, okay, I'm going to be stuck in the field, maybe it's for me. And we would have to do it because we haven't implemented that yet.
All the computers are busy.
We're a bit busy.
Yeah, more important.
Can you keep changing the blog marker?
Are you going to be here over the weekend? Or new microformats.
The sociological side. I ended up with attention because I like paving the cow paths principle.
Right.
So I followed that.
Right. And the paving cow paths principle is a general micromarket.
Yeah.
Right. I'm ready for another beer. No problem. Hey, thanks for like, it's like good questions. Like,
yeah, back before myself, the whole part of stuff there.
Yeah.
It's a wiki, there's mailing lists, points.
Right.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, not enough of us.
We've got a bit of a meaning this. Actually, we had that. We launched this thing.
I wanted to show you something.
Sure.
Bud Gibson and I
he's actually pretty active on my list. He started wiring Reblog into Xfolk, and he actually got a fair degree of success with it earlier this morning. Let's see if I can remember where it was. Here's the brightness. So he's got this website page on Community Engine. So we've just been batting around this Grease Monkey user script that basically annotates every single instance of Xfolk in the page with the link. And then he has an instance of Reblog, which he has called.
What's it?
Okay.
What's that?
Delicious Mike.
Oh, really? What are you doing here?
So I've been working on a new version of Reblog that has this concept of a self feed built into it. So, you know, in addition to all the regular feeds that you're subscribed to, there's also, you know, things that I push into it for republishing that aren't actually coming from the outside world. The idea is that, you know, right now there's four things that have been published into this, and by linking the Grease Monkey script to this thing, you can basically one-click republish them. So, post the entry, I can pretend edit this entry after I click. If you hit OK, it takes you over to the reblog and then allows you to PHP errors that should be ignored right now. It basically allows you to modify that entry, and then if you go back here, you can see that if I reload, five things that are in the feed. So it basically just takes the entire Xfolk chunk, grabs it as just one blob of HTML so that all data is lost, you know, finds the title, finds the link, and then you end up with, you know, reblogged hyperlinks. We're hoping to kind of extend that to HBAR and English Calendar and things like that.
So